A celebrated innovator, Sir Ian Taylor, has been approved to run a privately funded trial to prove that self-isolation can be done safely and effectively. He's calling it #151OffTheBench, and he wants to show an alternative to an overcrowded MIQ system. And he joins us now. Kia ora, Sir Ian.
Kia ora, Karen. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. And you?
This is flashback time. I remember you on telly.
All those years ago.
All those years ago. And I also remember expectorate. I remember that word. Yes.
Did you see it on the Wellington, was it a tram that she was talking about on the electric units? A tram?
No, I don't know what it was. I just heard you talking about it. And
yes.
I thought, God, I haven't heard that word for a long time.
That's good, because none of us know what it really means. We do, but we don't want to go around saying, please don't expectorate. Although it is a really horrible habit, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Anyway, let's talk about you. Why are you calling it #151OffTheBench?
So, well, when I started the open letters to the Prime Minister, the first one was that I wanted to talk to her about the team of 5 million. And I likened that to the idea that the run on 15 that she brought out when COVID first hit was perfect, because COVID was a team, you know, we talk about the team of 5 million, but we were playing against a team we'd never seen play before. And the only thing we could tell, really see if its strategy was it would attack our health. So the startup lineup was really important, that it was, you know, backed by science, medical people, all that sort of stuff. But as we headed into the second half of this game, we could see there was another strategy, and that was to slowly infect all of the businesses and the economy that funded the team of 5 million. So I was suggesting then that sitting on the bench, it was time to start looking to bring on the players off the bench to start addressing the other strategies. And that was, we needed really started to talk to business and other people who would start to focus on, instead of just saving lives, I think right from day one, we should have talked about saving lives and livelihoods. So the medical side of things, they'd be focusing on lives, and the sort of economic engine would focus on livelihoods. And we'd let a year or so go by without thinking about livelihoods. So what I was suggesting was we now needed to bring players off the bench who could help with saving livelihoods.
Well, makes perfect sense.
The 151 was, I started that, and about 2 weeks in, they announced that they would do this kind of test with 150 business people. And my position was I would never apply for MIQ, because there was another way to do it, and MIQ should be kept for those people who really needed to get home, those people, you know, whose family were ill. I mean, stories of people who haven't seen their children for a year or so, that's just not right. But we could try, there was another way we could try. And so they talked about this business one of 150 people, and I suggested that, you know, it was sort of a soft trial, and we had another idea. So my idea was, instead of being one of the 151, I'd just be 151 off the bench.
It's you. You're 151, and you're off the bench. So,
that right. Would be the idea, yes.
Okay, so what you're going to do is that you're going to fly to the States. You're going to a meeting. Is it a meeting that you need to be at? You want to be there. You can't do it by Zoom or whatever.
No, so I mean, that's one of the really interesting things. People talk about Zoom as this you know, magical device that has changed everything. But I think people who say you can do all this by Zoom only just discovered it during COVID. I mean, Zoom
yes.
And online and things like that, we've been using for a very long time, and they're part of a toolkit that you need. But you do need to be in front of these people at times, and for 2 years we haven't been able to do it. Now, in my case, what's more important about what I'm trying to do is to actually create a sort of likely situation for a business trip. The business trips are usually between one and five people. So most business trips I made were one. They'd last a week to a week and a half and would possibly take in two places. So I'm going up to meet with Fox Sport in LA. That way I'll have to go through LA Airport. Then I'll go to San Francisco to talk to Major League Baseball. That way I've got to go through LA Airport into San Francisco. So it's trying to create a real-world scenario for business, you know, for travel, where we can show there are steps you can take to do the most important thing. MIQ was set up because they were trying to stop COVID getting in, and until now, the place they tried to check whether you had COVID was here. So that's why all the MIQ rooms are full. They don't know where people are coming from. They don't know whether they've got MIQ. I mean, I think the irony of all that is the majority of people who go through MIQ don't have it. But what we're suggesting for the kind of the starting with business travel but moving on is let's see if we can get another system so people who really need MIQ and need to be, you know, in those situations can get there. But if we do this properly and we make sure that we've protected ourselves overseas on these trips, the trips are only as long as you need them to be, and that before you get on the plane coming back, you are tested to make sure you haven't got COVID. So you don't take up any MIQ room. You can go to what we're calling self-managed isolation, where, yes. Again, yeah.
You know, I understand. So, yeah. But, and I just interrupt you there and say, you're paying for this. You're not asking the government to pay for anything. You don't want to take up a space at MIQ that someone else needs. So you're paying for it. It's like an experiment that you're doing. And you're also highlighting some of the technology. This is a really key part of it because you persuaded the government to do it by highlighting this technology. So what are some of the things that you're going to be taking with you and using on this trip?
Yeah, this was the incredible thing. So, you know, when I talked about the bench, after the first story rolled, it was about 4 weeks ago. So, you know, to put this in context, we've been criticising the government for not moving fast, but this has only been 4 weeks and they've moved on helping us to do this. So this is business stepping forward to say we can help. But what I found was this technology, you know, there was stuff out there that wasn't being used. So there's the gold standard test is a PCR test. That's where you get this thing stuck up your nose. And it takes about 72 hours to get a result. I didn't know, but just up the road from our place, about 5 minutes away from our office, was a company working on a device that they've spent $115 million on. The US government has spent half of that, invested half of that. And this PCR test, you spit into a little container, put it in a box, shut the door, and 25 minutes later, it tells you whether you've got infectious COVID. And you know, wow. That's a massive leap forward. And so you can imagine even using that in place of the nasal testing, the kind of difference it could make. Then there's these special masks that another company's provided. There's these geofence watches that you use. So if they don't trust me when I come back to stay in my social isolation, I have this wristband that I wear that I can't take off, and it tracks me everywhere I am. So again, it's just, and it's all New Zealand technology. And wow. So what we're trying to do is showcase this to say, you know, I think one of the things that has surprised me most in the discussions over the last 4 weeks is this kind of distrust of business and people saying, so why should business do this? Well, first of all, you know, there's nothing privileged about taking these trips. Nobody is going on these trips unless they really have to. This is the safest place to be. So the business trips that are being taken are ones that really need to keep the economy running. And this economic engine, this business that people are critical of, is actually how our nurses get funded, our doctors get funded. It's actually how our politicians get funded. And we really have to make sure that economic engine keeps running. And right now, I know of people who've gone overseas and have absolutely no idea when they're coming back. A friend of mine's just lost a multi-million-dollar contract because he couldn't go for the meeting that was required that would last a week because he didn't know when we get back. We lost a $500,000 contract because before COVID, I would have sent somebody to America for 2 days. They would have installed something, turned it on, sat with them while they tested and come home. I couldn't send them. So we've got to find another way to do this that doesn't impact on MIQ but can keep businesses running.
Right, and also so many people work for business, so many employees work for New Zealand businesses. It's not just furnishing those who are running the company in terms of the finances, it's the paycheck, isn't it, for just ordinary people.
And I think when people get critical, you know, cynical about business, you know, I've heard people talk, well, this is privileged for business. But actually, the majority of businesses are small, like ours. I've got 35 people. You know, the bulk of the businesses, these international businesses that need to travel overseas, are relatively small. A lot of the bigger ones have offices overseas. They can do that sort of stuff. We don't have any offices overseas. We're proud to be working from New Zealand. And it's actually a badge of honour when we travel around the world. You know, you walk in and, oh, you're the Kiwis. You're from New Zealand. Love working with you guys. You know, it's that sort of thing. And that's why it's really important to be face-to-face with these people. And I suppose the other thing that's changed is earlier the whole world was locked down, so everyone was happy to Zoom or do whatever. But now, over the last 3 months, the rest of the world is moving, and it's not our decision anymore that it's sufficient to do it on Zoom. If somebody overseas wants to see us, it's not up to us to say, actually, it'll work just as well on Zoom.
Yes. What about your age, Sir Ian? You're 71, and but I ask you because...
Karen, don't remind me.
Well, I ask you because even though you're double vaxxed, do you say you're apparently in what they call a high-risk group? So what makes you high-risk? Is it your age?
No. So, you know, I mean, that's not my description of it. But remember, you know, when they started the vaccinations, they said everyone over 60 or over 70 needed to be vaxxed first because they were high risk. You know,
if they caught it.
If they caught it. That's all. You know, and I don't feel at risk. I mean, I'm still working full time, and there are a lot of people around my age. And you know, I feel it's sort of a matter of principle to say, boy, you're not putting me out to dry yet.
No. Of course, if this trial works, then it's not just for business, though. It could be used for anybody who to get back into the country, couldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. See, I think the MIQ system's got away on them, and it's really not fit for purpose. I think the thing they ran today had 22,000 people in the waiting room after 3,000 people had got seats. We're not going to get people home. So the first idea is to start in small steps, so with small groups that really need to go overseas that, you know, you can get more control around too. These people coming back are not going to be jumping over fences. You know, they will come back and they will do their 2 weeks or their 1 week, whatever it turns out to be, because, you know, the cost to the business of someone breaking the rules is too consequential. And the people you send overseas you trust. But as we start to move, I think the next one would be looking at sports groups so that they don't take up MIQs either, because they travel with their own medical teams. So the medical teams are just given this task to say, before your team get on the plane to come home, you make sure the week before everyone is constantly tested, no one has COVID, and if that's the case when you land, you can go into self-isolation. We will keep an eye on you. And you're in charge of this team, so no one's going to break the boundaries. Because trying to deal to this, the biggest constraint they've got is current MIQs have guards, fences, nurses, and they just can't staff them, you know, well enough.
Yes. I've got a question for you here. Sir Ian, how do you get from Auckland to Wellington? We don't trust one test. MIQ is the only way. You could infect a plane load of passengers flying internally when you get home. Remember, COVID came from overseas.
So, I mean, that's kind of interesting. I don't know what the numbers are, but, you know, they put 170,000 people through MIQ. The vast majority of those flew on planes, flew into MIQs, didn't have COVID, and left the hotels without COVID. The most dangerous place at the moment, my people have been travelling overseas, I've had four of them, have been travelling overseas for a year and a half through the most COVID-ravaged countries in the world. So, and through the States, through Europe, they catch a plane every weekend to go from one golf tournament to another. They have not caught COVID in a year and a half. One of them just flew back. He went into quarantine here after the Ryder Cup, and he called me and said, this is the most unsafe I've felt in a year and a half. So there are steps you can take. We've got the top-end masks that make sure you're not giving anything out. But remember, the idea is that when I've got it, we will be testing every day while I'm away. Yes. There's all sorts of technology. So I don't get on the plane with COVID. If I catch it on the plane, that's caught soon as I get off. I go into my quarantine. When I leave that quarantine in Auckland to fly back to Dunedin, I will have been proven free of COVID.
Okay. So when are you going?
So I'm just working through, you know, this all happened on Friday.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just working through MB and a few places like that just to make sure. But I want to try and do it within the next fortnight, because what I also want to try and do is we are behind the eight ball in trying to save livelihoods. You know, lives and livelihoods is what we should be talking about, because, you know, livelihoods start to be lost, that impacts on lives as well. So we've got a lot of ground to catch up, and I want to see if I can get this test through, prove that it works, so that, you know, hopefully before Christmas or very start of the new year, people are going, I can fit into that schedule that you just did, I'm okay.
Okay, and
you imagine if overseas, we could also, those people who've been stuck, we've now got a model for them that says, if you go to this place and for 2 weeks, just get yourself cleared so that you know that when you get on the plane, you don't have COVID, then you can fly back. And now we've got a whole lot of other resources and places to put you that don't have to have guards, don't have to have, you know, we've got to find another way to do it.
Okay, and very, very, very quickly, I've got a text here from Robin on Waiheke Island. It says, all very well hearing advocacy for quick business trips to the US, but no mention at all of carbon emissions. Hello, we're facing a climate crisis. Has that crossed your mind?
So let me clarify for the person on Waiheke Island. So when we came back, so when on 14th of March, when we came back to New Zealand after the, you know, we lost every one of our sports contracts in the world, we came back and thought, what's the biggest threat we've got? The borders will be closed when the sports start. Now, one of the things that we were really aware of was that our carbon footprint was enormous. I did 500,000 to 1 million miles a year, and we were starting to address that. COVID allowed us to address it front on, and we have reduced our carbon footprint in 1 year by 85%. And that is the direct result of COVID. We do all of those sports events that we used to have to travel to. We do them all from our office in Dunedin. We now need one or two people traveling the world. So that 15% of flying is our carbon footprint now. And those people are needed to travel so that we can keep people employed and working here in New Zealand.
Okay. And can you be trusted? That's the big question.
Yes. I mean, you know, I mean, when you think about it, it's odd that
I'm sure you can.
No, but it's odd, you know, the consequences of what we're trying to do is give businesses certainty that they can plan a trip that has to happen. And, you know, these people, when we talk about it, people who talk about the carbon footprint, we have been really conscious of that. And COVID has given us some really clear signs forward about how we can deal to it. And we will never go back. We will be at least 85% off our carbon footprint.
But, yes, no, I don't mean about that. I mean in terms of scarpering out of the hotel while you're away.
Yeah. You know, when you look at the people who've scarpered out of the hotel, they've got nothing to lose. Business, when you come back, it'd be really interesting to see how many business people jumped over the fence. And, you know, these business teams that go are usually 1 to 5 number of people, and you put them in a place, they know they're going to stay there. And these kind of bands that we're wearing, you can't get out the door anyway without the alarms going off.
Okay, I'd like to hear what the alarm it makes. Very good. Hey, well, thank you very, very much for talking us through that. And you'll be off in the next couple of weeks, we hear, and no doubt we'll watch your journey. As you go, it'll be reported. So good luck with it, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thanks, Karen.
Good to talk to you.
Bye-bye.
That's Ian Taylor.